Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 22, the Momo Sissoko episode. Since this introductory part is usually a joke for the most of the time, but there is now another player wearing number 22. Hopefully in a few years we're not saying his name. And that obviously is Federico Chiesa. But let me bring in the usual crew here with Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
How's it going today, Danny?
Got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Yeah, good evening. I hope my audio is all perfect and going, because pre-show had a little bit of audio issues, but hello, everyone.
Don't touch anything, like I said right before we hit record. Don't touch anything. And we've got Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Also, Asamoah. I don't know. I don't want to butcher his first name, but Asamoah.
Asamoah. Very easy to figure out what we're talking about this week, and it's what we totally forgot to talk about last week because there is so much going on, and that would be the return of the Champions League. And the byproduct of that means the schedule is going to get a whole lot busier. I believe Tuttosport had it right across their cover on this, the Monday that we're recording here, that Juventus coming up has 7 games in 23 days. So if you liked how the schedule was over the summer, you're going to get that again in a few days here. So since Sam was the one who broke down the groups right after the draw, I will go to somebody not named Sam to begin this first part. Chucks, your thoughts on the Champions League group, and obviously how many thousands of words are you going to commit to Ronaldo versus Messi?
I like your bait and switch there. Sam was ready. Sam was ready to jump in, and I was like, "Ooh, no, got you right there."
Foiled. Foiled.
That's. I'm sure that's how you've broken many a lover's hearts as well.
I zigged right when you thought I was going to zag.
No. I mean, it's an interesting group. I was thinking about it earlier today, and a friend of mine who I'm in a WhatsApp group with, from my former football team back in the Netherlands, he was saying, and this is something I have also noticed in the past, which, I don't know, it's just kind of the reality of it all. It's just that it's kind of a typically lopsided group in which you have, like, the top two teams that are clearly really, really good. And then the other two that are, I mean, yeah, they're just okay. I mean, they're essentially Europa League teams. So you have two by far and away Champions League teams, and two, I mean, just clearly Europa League teams. And, you know, my friend was saying, like, this is becoming a pattern, A, and B, it's just becoming more prevalent. Like, I think, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but really I want to say, like, at least four or five groups this year, and last year, really, too, were like that, where you just had that, you know, two clubs, golf, and then two clubs. So I think this is the case here again with Juventus. With our group, you know, Juventus, Barca, of course, and then, yeah, Dynamo Kiev, and, well, here I go, Ferencváros. we tried desperately, let the record show, we tried desperately, practiced desperately before we started recording.
We left it up to the one European of the group, so if Chucks didn't get it right, then it's on you, buddy.
I mean, like I said in our preamble. I mean, I had a Hungarian friend, and I mean, that's about all the exposure. Well, one Hungarian friend, and then one girl I knew. She was Vietnamese, but raised in Hungary. So, yeah. But anyway, Ferencváros and Dynamo Kiev. I mean, clearly, I think this is a very negotiable group. I mean, really, if we are in any way, shape, or form intending to at least challenge for the league or challenging somewhat for a Champions League, I mean, this group should just be perfectly doable. I mean, I think this is one of those groups where if we don't make it out of it, we frankly don't deserve it, you know, don't deserve to progress. Like, if we don't progress, we clearly just do not deserve to progress. So, you know, really, we should just be able to make it from this group without too much difficulty. I think the away game in, you know, it's typical again with that away game in Ukraine, which is going to be in the winter. It's going to be, you know, weather circumstances are going to be, I mean, unpleasant probably. The travel to kind of Eastern Europe is always, you know, always a bit unpleasant, especially now with COVID. That, I mean, that just might throw some extra variables in there. but I mean, this, I expect this to progress. We'll be first, we'll be second, I don't know. That's always kind of a toss-up. The thing is about Juve and Barcelona, clearly these are two teams that are both, and I've always found that Barca and Juve, over the last year and a half, we've been following similar trajectories in the sense that both been clubs in flux, really. Barca with a new coach now, with Koeman, and just with having so many coaches over the last few years. Obviously, the whole ordeal with Messi, and just having a really aging squad that they've rebooted a little bit over the summer, but just, yeah, again, also a squad just like Juve that people said this is a squad with a really high average age, relying too much on the old guard, and it just needs new blood, both managerially and player-wise. And now, yeah, now you have two clubs that have brand new coaches, very different coaches, and nobody really knows what to expect from these clubs. So it's going to be kind of a clash of two unknowns, and that makes it even more unpredictable for me. Like, I truly have no idea if we're going to become first and first or second in this one. It's just the two clubs are just in too much of flux and too unpredictable right now. I really have no idea. But nevertheless, I do expect us to get at least second.
I think anything, you know, I think they should, like, the goal should be to top the group. But I think just qualification should be pretty much a given. I mean, you know, going to Kiev, especially as Chuck said, in the winter, you know, it's not always easy. And, you know, Juve fans, some of us probably still have some PTSD remaining of, like, going to, like, FC Copenhagen, I think it was the one time. It was, like, they played terribly there. And then they went to Turkey and they played terrible. Like, for a while there, they went to, like, against teams that they should have beaten. But because it was, like, long trips. And even last year against Moscow, which they got bailed out by that incredible Douglas Costa game. But goal, I mean, you know, outside of that, you know, you always kind of want to not have to travel that far. But outside of that, I think it's a pretty manageable group. It will be interesting to see, like, the headlines really will be what type of Barcelona squad shows up, what type of Juventus squad shows up. Two squads that are clearly in kind of like some sort of rebuild, kind of retool phase. So that's going to be really the main story. And, you know, overall, I was pretty happy with the draw. I don't think we could have asked for a significantly better draw, to be honest with you. The one thing I do want to mention was the UEFA really likes to, you know, milk their Champions League draw, because if you saw that show, it was like they took like 40 minutes to draw the first, like, to even draw the pots, which means nothing. Like, it's just Juventus Group H, awesome. Like, I waited 35 minutes for that. Really, really cool. Like, that was an enjoyable 35 minutes of television. And then they take forever to do the presentation, and they present like the team of the year, and, you know, just all these weird stuff. I you can tell they really want to milk this, which is slightly annoying. But outside of that, I mean, you know, overall, I was pretty pleased with the group.
Yeah, I think we're looking at one of the best possible scenarios that we could have had with this draw. My main concern going into it was staying far away from RB Leipzig in pot three, because that could have been really killer. I'm glad we missed them. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, first and second in the group, I don't know if it, I mean, obviously you'd like to win it to win, because this is competitive sports, but ever since they shifted that rule around for the group stage seeding, where they put the league winners in, you know, the top league winners into pot one and then arrange the rest by coefficient, winning your group has become less of an advantage in the round of 16 draw. Like, I think the first year that they did that was the year that we played Bayern Munich in the round of 16. It's not the, you know, the direst of things. Obviously, you know, you have to get out. And I think that this is a group that they can definitely get out with, you know, because especially since, you know, there are, looking at the other groups, there are at least two groups of death in this draw.
Poor Atalanta. Poor Atalanta.
Oh God, Atalanta. But here's the thing. I actually would look at Atalanta and say they can probably get second over Ajax in that group. And, you know, the way Liverpool's been defending this year, I can see them winning one of those games like 6-5.
Those games are going to be must-see TV because
yeah,
just the goal potential. I mean, of course, now that we've said that, they're all going to be like 1-0 boring ass games.
Right.
You know, there's like, potential for, you know, 4-3 all over the place yeah, in that
group. Like you look at some of the other groups, and this is where I disagree with you a little bit, Chucks, in that I don't think that these are your standard two Titan and out groups in a lot of this competition, like Group H, Man United, PSG, RB Leipzig, that's really difficult. That's going to be difficult. Group F doesn't have a lot of heavyweights in it, but Lazio, Dortmund, Club Brugge, Zenit, that's, you know, there are three teams that could get out of that group conceivably. Liverpool, Ajax, Atalanta, that's difficult. Real Madrid, Borussia Mönchengladbach, Shakhtar, and Inter in Group B, that's a hell of a group.
That's the toughest one, I think.
And also, I hate to sound like I'm correcting people, but we're actually not going to be going to Kiev in the dead of winter because the away game against Kiev is the first game next week.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to correct that. I was actually just looking at the schedule. So pardon me on that.
So
come on, Chucks.
So, I blindly believe Chucks. To be honest, he was like, "We're going in the winter." I was like, "I guess we're going to winter." Like, that's not going to be awesome, yeah, but I guess we can do that.
Yeah. So we gotta, you know, the quirks of the schedule do help us there. But yeah, I mean, like I said, anything less than advancing out of this group would be at this point a complete humiliation. I don't have huge knockout stage expectations, but if we had, you know, if things in the draw had gone a little bit different, I would have been concerned about progressing based on a couple of different pairings. But the way things shook out, I'm confident that progression will be a thing. We'll get out, I think. Knock on wood. Yeah, it like you said, Sergio, there couldn't have been much better of a draw than this.
Yeah, apologies there. That indeed, for that scheduling thing, I did just look at the schedule and yeah, pardon me.
You're forgiven, Chuck.
Thank you, Sensei.
Sensei.
Yes.
It's chap one week and sensei the next, man.
I gotta keep you on your toes, man. gotta keep you guessing, you know.
We'll say October in Kiev probably isn't necessarily a pleasant thing, but it's better than November or December in Kiev.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and indeed, match day six is Barcelona away, which honestly is probably better. Well, I don't know. I always go back and forth between having the most difficult game first or last. I don't know. One day I'm like, yeah, I'd rather have it first. Other day I think, oh, I'd rather have it last. But I don't know. It's flipped the coin on that one. But no, I totally agree with Sam in the sense that first let me actually backtrack a little bit on that with the scheduling. I think it's pretty favorable that, for instance, match day 4 and 5, we have two home games against, well, indeed, Ferencváros and Dynamo Kiev. I'm getting better with that, by the way. But I think that's a good way to kind of prep and hopefully have the job done before we go away to Barcelona. So that would be preferable. But also, no, I agree with Sam that like the difference of coming first or second, since they kind of shook up that system with the champions pot in pot one. Yeah, indeed. I've noticed it's really... the marginal benefit of coming first is actually not that much anymore because, yeah, indeed, you will have sometimes where you have like PSG will come second, or I think that was last year, wasn't it? That no, sorry, PSG came first and then Real Madrid came second in their group, and it's like, oh, great, let's face Real Madrid or something, or Spurs came second when they were good. And as my cat furiously meows in the background, my friend.
My cat has come on the pod once or twice since we started this thing, Chuck, so
yeah, she'll just walk in and just like furiously meow and then just walk out, just like walk, not even run, just walk.
that's the human, why do I not have food in front of me?
Yeah,
meow.
Yeah, cats are strange creatures. But like I said, I think marginal benefit really of coming first versus second is not as much, so I guess I'm not as concerned now that, you know, now that Sam reminded me of that point. Now, I guess I'm not as concerned anymore, first or second. Now I'm just like, let's just qualify.
I think overall, like you said, by the time match day six rolls around, Juventus has to be qualified by that point. I mean, any other scenario where you're still kind of like playing to get in, at that point, something has gone like tremendously wrong. You know, I mean, I understand that sometimes us Juve fans kind of like get a little queasy in the Champions League because of all the things that have happened in that competition. But I mean, you know, Juventus should very easily beat the Hungarian team. I'm not gonna try it like Chuck's did. You know what
Coward.
That team is.
Fair Coward.
You conveniently skirted around that one.
Yeah, the team from Hungary. You know, they should easily beat them home and away. You know, Dinamo is probably gonna be a bit tougher away, but they should still beat them. And then just kind of duke it out with Barcelona. I do have a personal stake in Juventus topping the group because my girlfriend is a Barcelona fan, so we made a bet of who would top the group. But outside of that, I agree with you guys that it's a crapshoot whether or not like it's better to be the first or the second one. You know, I think they should just qualify and that would be good enough. What I do want to say regarding the groups is that every year, and I understand they have like a wonky formula and all of that, but every year the top seeded clubs, like there's always clubs that make sense, and then there's like all disrespect to Zenit St. Petersburg, which is a fun club, but there's no logic to them being like the number one seed. Like FC Porto, fine, you could maybe make an argument, but there's no way that they should be like the number one seed, and Manchester City is the second, like is in the second tier, Barcelona is in the second tier. Like it doesn't really make sense. I get there's like a coefficient and like a formula, and they do the whole UEFA thing, but yeah, that, I think that's also a reason why sometimes there's like groups that there's clearly like two very good teams and two very bad teams. Well, not very bad teams, but two teams that are of a lesser quality, and then just weird groups like Sam was mentioning, like the Zenit St. Petersburg group, which is Dortmund and Zenit and Lazio, which is just going to be in Club Brugge even, which is not necessarily a pushover. So that's going to be interesting to see overall. Like that's, you know, it's just going to be, it's just something that happens every single year, and it's never made sense to me.
How dare you insult the former employer of Claudio Marchisio, Sergio?
Oh yeah, my apologies.
And the Hungarian club.
Shame.
Or the Shame. Hungarian club. I tried. Afterwards, I tried. I think.
I think you can kind of sort of disrespect Ferencvaros a little bit because I think they might have had the lowest club coefficient in the entire draw.
Hey, but they right now they're second in the league.
They're second in the Hungarian league. I believe this is the first time in 25 years that they've made the Champions League proper.
I honestly don't want to disrespect them because I love those little stories. Like I think there was this club from the Faroe Islands or something that was this close to making it to the Europa League. Like they lost the last like qualifying into the Europa League, and it would have been like this awesome story, you know? So it's always like, it's always cool to me when like a smaller club kind of like makes its way to like a big competition. So I think that's always
awesome. Apoel a few years ago, making it down to like the quarterfinals.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that's awesome. And I think that does help financially all this, like the smaller clubs from the smaller leagues. I think that's just good for everyone. But
I mean, imagine Atalanta, you know, if Atalanta hadn't made it as far as they did, like, especially given COVID, I imagine Duván Zapata would be playing for another club right now. Maybe Luis Muriel would be playing for another club right now. You know, they might have given Papu Gomez a little kick out the door when I think it was the Qataris came calling for him at some point this summer.
Not to go back to the, you know, Atalanta fan club that sometimes this podcast becomes, but I also love that team because they have just followed that blueprint that you have to do to kind of like, you know, maintain that level and progress through the European stage. And they're doing everything right. And it's awesome that they actually, you know, managed to keep the team together and they're playing really well right now. And I mean, you know, you wouldn't count them out of making like noise in the Champions League this year either. You know, I mean, they have a very good, solid chance of making it to the knockout stages again, which I mean, that's
And now
awesome.
They know how to do that. It, which they didn't last year, which is another, you know, they felt it this time. As opposed to last time when, you know, it was all new to them and they were kind of starstruck. Now they're like, all right, we've done this once. Let's go to work. Hopefully, you know, all the other players that have done and had been deep in the Champions League that are play for Juventus will feel the same way.
Well, they don't have the experience of Daniele Rugani to lean on anymore. So,
noted Champions League superstar Daniele Rugani.
But speaking of Atalanta, just as a total tangent, Gasperini gave an interview recently where he basically said he was the one who made the three-man backline in vogue. And I just kept thinking, like, do you remember who kind of actually made the three-man backline in vogue when he was winning titles in Turin? But anyway, I know Chuck said he doesn't want to make predictions, but we're going to make predictions. So apologies, Chuck.
Rejected.
and you can't just say first or second like you did. So if you guys had to put money on it, and I don't know what kind of betting guys you are, but consensus is that first or second is pretty much the only real way. And, you know, barring any major catastrophes, it seems like that's going to happen. But if you guys had to put on your prognosticating hats, where does Juventus finish, and kind of how, I don't know if convincing is the right word, but how do you think they kind of get to where you think they might be at the end of the group stage?
I think they have to fit. Like, if I were just making a prediction, they finish first. There's no, I understand that, you know, new coach, new system, everything is going, like, you know, new in Juventus land, but there's no reason they should be dropping points against Ferencváros or Dynamo Kiev, or, and like, there's no way, like, they have to beat those clubs. And it's really going to come down to, like, a head-to-head against Barcelona, which it's going to be interesting to see, as we already discussed, but I'd like to believe that we can kind of get the better of them over two games and finish top of the group. If we were actually making predictions, that would be my prediction. I'm sure it's definitely not going to happen that way, but, you know, I would hope and I would like it for that to be the case.
I would certainly love it as well, but I'm actually probably a little more inclined to say that we'll edge into second. You know, if we do manage to take all 3 points off of Barcelona in the home game, that would dramatically change things. But new coaches, new system for everybody. But I think the difference for me is going to be that Ronald Koeman is not new to coaching. And
not new to Barcelona either.
Yeah, that too. Oh, well, I mean, Pirlo's not new to Juventus, I said, but
yeah.
I think, yeah, I kind of think that there'll be, you know, that there'll be at least one of the games Barcelona will take a win and the other one will be a draw. Like, I kind of have a feeling home draw, win at the Camp Nou when everybody's qualified and just playing for seeding on Barcelona's side. Yeah, I would edge towards saying second place.
For once, I'm not the contrarian, because for once someone agrees with me. No, I actually agree with Sam. Yeah, I think we'll also come in second. Purely, I mean, I'm basing my, I guess, very flimsy prediction on basically on one question, which is, like, which team will have their stuff together more on time? Which team will have their stuff together quicker than the other? Between Juventus and Barcelona, and just given that they have new coaches and new systems and stuff. And I'm going to say, I think Barca will probably have their stuff together better/quicker than we do. And just purely on that basis, I think they'll edge it into first.
I will also say I know we've all been trying to avoid this, except for Danny's joke, but a lot of the head-to-heads against Barcelona are going to come down to which one of the two aliens playing in that in those matches is going to show up in better form and better, you know, which one wants to show up the other more. Because when you do have players like that in a game, they can be the deciding factor regardless of anything else, which makes it a bit more of a crapshoot. And while I am predicting that Juventus will finish second in the group, finishing first is by no means out of the question. But, you know, those games are going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, Lord knows. One thing's for sure, given that it's Messi versus Ronaldo, we for sure are going to be on primetime television. So thank God for that.
You mean they're not going to be hyping up Pjanic for Arthur? That isn't the number one draw in this.
What do you mean, Danny?
It's not going to be Chesney Ter Stegen.
I don't necessarily buy into the whole, you know, Ronaldo, Messi, industrial goat complex, but it is going to be kind of fun and kind of interesting to see them go head-to-head again, which it was always weird to me that they're going head-to-head, but they're both attackers, so they're not really going head-to-head. But, you know, it's either way going to be fun. I think they haven't really played each other since Ronaldo left Real Madrid. So it's just going to be, you know, fun to see, and I think interesting to see. And obviously that's going to be the big angle everyone takes. And I'm pretty sure that's going to be everything that ESPN and the likes talk about. But, you know, either way, despite the whole hype there's going to be over it, I think it's just going to be good games and a very good first test for the Andrea Pirlo-led Juventus, because that's going to be, I mean, even if Barcelona is in a bit of a disarray and new coach and whatever, they're always going to be there as kind of like a contender. So that's going to be a very good first test for the team in them actually going up against truly elite competition. So I really, those are the games that obviously everyone's going to be watching. And so will we.
Pray for us moderating the comments.
Yes. Fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah, here, here.
Well, no, here. Knowing what you mentioned a few minutes ago, Sergio, and that your significant other is a Barcelona supporter, what are those match days going to be like since, you know, it's Champions League, and as we mentioned, there's a lot riding on it.
Yeah, I will be very civil.
he's saying this with a straight face, folks, so he's not – Or maybe I'm not now sure the smile's coming in. So.
I'm not sure if she will, but I will be very civil. I'll very much keep it above the belt. Just because when last year's when Barcelona was eviscerated by eventual champions Bayern Munich, I got a taste of like things not going her way when it comes to football. So I'm just going to be like, if Juventus win, I'm going to be like, hey, it was a good game. It was a good game, you know, good game, good teams. I'm just not going to gloat. I know where I stand on that one.
You couldn't really brag about how Juventus did in the Champions League either.
Yeah, exactly. Although I don't know if I'd rather just like quietly go into the night instead of like just get absolutely eviscerated by Bayern Munich. But, you know, that's you know, we can have a whole argument about that.
Yeah, this is why you find a partner that likes the teams you like. This is why my wife and I have gotten as far as we have, because we're both huge Phillies fans. That's...
You can both wallow into not making the playoffs.
And yes, it's the despair of being a Philadelphia fan is unique and unifying.
One more thing before we get to the Twitter questions, and we've got a couple ones that might be kind of long form answers, which are good, seeing as we don't have much else to talk about these days during an international break. But as I mentioned beforehand, or in the introduction to things, on this episode, 7 games in 23 days, and that obviously means some league games as well. But if you look at the schedule, it's mostly against teams outside of Lazio that Juventus should, you know, all things go according to plan, should handle pretty well. So how much are you hoping that Andrea Pirlo, knowing what this international break has been like, where it's busy for a lot of players, how much are you guys hoping that this is kind of the first iteration of we see of Andrea Pirlo using the depth of the squad to his advantage and really rotates and tries to keep guys fresh, knowing that there's both Champions League and also games against provincial Serie A sides?
I mean, to me, I mean, yeah, 7 games in 23 days is nuts, but it's also, I think it's not that far off from some periods in normal seasons when it comes to Champions League group play. Like, this is a little bit on the extreme side, but playing, you know, maybe 85, you know, maybe 85% of this is what the group stage usually is. I do think it's the blessing that you're getting a lot of Provinciale in the middle of that sequence, you know, with Lazio being the only one that really becomes a huge league game. But yeah, the depth of the squad's depth is going to have to be used. And if Pirlo does it, he's really going to be the first one that's really utilized it in a while. Because, you know, Saudi didn't rotate, obviously, all that much. But Allegri really didn't either. I mean, you look at Miralem Pjanic's minutes numbers from his last few seasons under Allegri, and he was playing, what, 5,000-6,000 minutes a year.
He was one of the most used out of them all.
It's no wonder that he ended up just ground down by the end of the season. Like, it's no wonder that, you know, he would start seasons like gangbusters and just, you know, and, you know, crater by Christmas because he was never given an opportunity to rest. And so I think it will be really important. I think the really important thing is going to be that Pirlo is going to have to do what Zidane did at Real Madrid and convince Cristiano Ronaldo to sit for a couple of those games. But you have the depth to do it. You have the ability to, you know, if you keep this for, that's the other thing is whether or not this 3-4-1-2 formation is the formation or whether or not Pirlo is going to start mixing things up a bit and throwing something else and something new out there, which we still really don't know because he's so new to this. But up front, the depth up front is absurd. You can play a game that's where it's, you know, Dybala, Ronaldo up front, Dybala, Morata up front, Dybala, Kulusevski, Ronaldo, Kulusevski in behind, Ramsey in behind. You know, if you really wanted to go wild and make Chiesa and put Chiesa into the strike pair, you can do that too, because he's done that before at Fiorentina. The place where I would be a little wary about is the midfield and the back three. Cause you know, you've only really got four guys. Cause there's no, I don't see a fifth guy there that can really play in the midfield. So, you know, if somebody gets hurt in the midfield, that's going to cause some major problems. And the other thing is Giorgio Chiellini is going to have to be rested. He will be playing every other game, maybe every third game. Mario Demiral is going to have to come in and play some good, meaningful minutes. And we will be getting De Ligt back too in the middle of that stretch between now and Christmas, which will help immensely. But yeah, I think that Pirlo is going to have to take advantage of that depth. I think at the end he will. I think he's smart enough. And the depth, for the most part, is good enough. But if one position group or another does get like a rash of injuries, that could affect things in ways that we don't like. You know, if you end up all of a sudden down to, you know, the bare bones in the middle of the group stage, that is when Ferencváros or Dinamo Kiev could pull surprises and maybe imperil Juventus even getting out of the group. And it could see us drop in the league table, you know, a little bit and all of a sudden have a points gap that's really difficult to recover from. So keeping everybody healthy and rested is going to be very, very important. And I hope Pirlo does what his two immediate predecessors, really his three immediate predecessors, because let's be honest, Conte didn't really rotate either. What his predecessors didn't really do, which is to make use of the squad. Conte had the, you know, something of an excuse because that his squads weren't nearly as deep, certainly not with this kind of quality. But yeah, he's got to do that. This is something he's got to do if we're going to get through this stretch in contention for either of those two trophies.
Yeah. So Sam, just to your point about the schedule, like usually. And I mean, I agree, there are periods during the season that you do have like those really condensed schedules. Usually around, I think around January or February, that usually happens, that you'll have that like spree of like, I don't know, 5-6 games in a very.
And they start the Coppa Italia for by the time Juventus gets into the Coppa Italia, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So that's true, definitely. But I think if I'm not mistaken, usually the international break, during the international break, usually countries have two games or play two games in that period. And I was just looking at the schedule, but I'm seeing now like three games on the schedule. So, for instance, take Italy.
Yeah, play three games, exactly.
Yeah, but usually it's two, right? I think. And that's kind of the unusual thing. So you have, so they have three games here.
Because they lost the September Internationals this year.
Right, right. So then they have to make up for that one. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of already an anomaly anyways, that they have that they have an extra game kind of shoved into what is already a really short international break anyway. I mean, the international break is usually like, I mean, essentially 10 to 14 days. So you have three games in that period, and now you have seven games in a three-week period. And I mean, it's just, it's almost inhumane, really, I think. I remember reading this report. Actually, I had to do some research for my book about this. It was on FIFA Pro, and it was basically this report. It was called At the Limit. And they were talking about how top-level players now play just more games than ever in less and less time than ever. You know, some players play 50, 60, up to 80 games per season, which is just insane. Like, that's absolute madness to play that many games in a season. You know, you already have that. And this was pre-COVID. I remember that report was 2019. So that report was pre-COVID. And then imagine how it is now. I mean, I don't know how many games like players are going to have to play this season in like what time span. It's going to just be totally nuts. Plus, you already have a pandemic to deal with. So, you know, you're at more risk.
It makes you wonder if the five subs is going to turn into a permanent thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, who knows?
I wouldn't be against it based on that data alone.
Yeah.
That you were talking about, because I've seen that report too.
Yeah, yeah. But it's funny because I think the Premier League, I think they rejected the five subs. Wasn't it the league? I think it was the Premier League that rejected the five subs, which was, I don't know, interesting choice. But, well, oh yeah, the Pirlo question. I think it's a blessing and a curse that Pirlo hasn't made up his mind with respect to what his preferred formation / starting lineup is. So I think it's a blessing in this case because that means he's going to be more flexible with respect to rotation. Because, I mean, if you're not set on one formation, then, I mean, you could say, okay, I need to rest, let's say, Ronaldo and Bentancur. And then that will mean, okay, and that means I need to change formations. Well, sure, fine. So I think it could be a blessing in that sense that he'll be more flexible in not only changing formations and tactics, but then also rotating players. But it's a curse in a sense that, well, I mean, we just don't know what he's going to do. Like, frankly, it's just so uncertain. Like, if he still hasn't sorted out what his best formation is, and now he has to constantly rotate players through, is that going to help or hurt like his process of figuring out what his best 11 / formation is? And I'm just not really sure. I'm going to lean, since I'm a pessimist, I'm going to lean towards a cautious optimism.
I do agree with all of your points. I do think it's going to be very important to rotate. I'm actually not that worried about the attack. I think the attack is going to sort itself out. I mean, they have so many guys to throw out there. Like Sam mentioned, I mean, it's really going to be, I don't think they will have any issues unless there's like a really bad, you know, rash of injuries, which, you know, we hope that doesn't come to be. But I think the attack is stacked. And the midfield, I do not share the concerns that Sam had necessarily. I think they have, you know, they have four guys, maybe even throw in, you know, the here comes Sami Khedira. He's still in the team. Like, they didn't take
him out. I mean, you don't.
You know, he's still on the team. So, you know, he could maybe actually fill in the lineup. But you have a guy like Ramsey who could, you know.
For 20 minutes until he goes back to the trainer's room? Or
listen, you need 20 minutes sometimes. Sometimes all you need is 20 minutes. And sometimes all you need is a couple games for Sami Khedira to come in and, you know, just kind of like be a guy against the Veronas of the world, you know. So I think that they're good.
Is Pirlo even letting him train with the first team at this point?
I think he is. I mean, I've seen pictures of him training, but I'm not super.
I mean, is he fit?
Well, not right now.
That's the eternal question.
Yeah, exactly. But he will at some point, and maybe he can give you some minutes. And, you know, on the wings, Alexander is going to come back. Federico Bernardeschi is going to come back. You have a bunch of guys to throw out that position. The one that I am a little bit concerned about, it is the defense, because Giorgio Chiellini is already kind of like, he had a thing. It's been kind of like, you know, loose on what type of injury he had, but he already kind of got hurt on the, you know, on the Italian national team camp. And
I think he just took a hard, I think it was a hard impact injury. That's the way I've been interpreting what I've heard about that, that it was like a more like a bruise.
Yeah, that's definitely like, I don't think it's like a big deal, but he all like, that's going to continue to happen because Giorgio Chiellini is, you know, he's a veteran, like that, those things are going to happen. So, you know, if you lose that guy and then Bonucci, who has been, now he's been like the super overworked guy, you kind of want to manage his minutes there. Demiral is going to have to step up. De Ligt is going, it's not going to have to like an acclimation period after his injury. He's going to have to step in right away. And we're going to have to continue to rely on Danilo, which, to be fair, he's been pretty good at that position. He's been pretty decent. But, you know, he's going to have to keep contributing there. That would be the thing that would, you know, kind of like scare me the most, you know, regarding the depth and regarding the overload of games that we have going on right now.
Leave it to Sergio to bring Sami Khedira back into the conversation.
Hey, he's still on the team, man. He's still, like, technically, there's a scenario in which he scores for us in the Champions League final. Like, that's not a thing that cannot happen.
All right, Twitter questions from friend of the blog, Handy Vandy. It's been a few weeks since we've gotten one from him, so welcome back, old buddy. And he says that we've seen all the major historic teams in American sports have this pattern of dominance, then a dry run. So the question is, could this be the future for Juventus? And I mean, yeah, that's my editorializing it. What do you guys see kind of happening? As I mean, as we've mentioned, Juventus is already a team in transition, and you look at when, obviously, Ronaldo's contract is coming up in a couple of years, so that's going to be another.
Ronaldo's contract coming up could either be seen as something to gnash one's teeth over, or as a potential opportunity to use all that money that you're all of a sudden saving. I mean, Yeah, that definitely will most likely be in Juventus's future at some point because it is the way of sports. I don't see it happening in the immediate future because Juve are so far ahead of the rest of Italy in terms of finances. You know, they were the only team that was really run well enough to not come to a screeching halt when the economy downturns in 2008. They have the J Stadium, which is, sorry, Allianz, if they're listening. They have the Allianz, which is, we were talking about the Champions League this episode, and you can't use corporate sponsorship names in UEFA competition. That's why I said it. You know, but we have the stadium, which is such an insane advantage over everybody else in Italy. And you see how desperate everybody has been to get it. You know, I mean, Danny, I'm surprised you didn't needle both Tito and Bren in your special episode about just the utter failures that stadiums have been for both of those, Roma and Fiorentina. You know, and even now, like, you know, we've been talking for weeks about the Italian Senate starting doing a vote on a law that would make it easier for clubs to build stadiums. But we've been waiting on that for like, what, 3 weeks now? Maybe even more? I've said years ago, like maybe around like 2014, I started saying this, that the first team that will beat Juventus to the Scudetto will be the first of the bigger teams to open their own stadium. And I still kind of stand by that. I mean, we're a rebuilding team that is still far and away, at least on paper, the most talented team in Serie A. You know, they're not necessarily the team that plays the best, but they are the most talented. And when you can say that and still be in a rebuilding phase, that says a lot about the gap that there is between you and the rest of it, of the field. So, I mean, yes, I think that period, that fallow period, will come eventually, but I don't think it's coming particularly soon.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the streak will end at some point. I did it for the piece about, you know, last year's championship. You know, every time I've gotten to do that one, I just keep tacking on the whole, you know, this has never happened before. Like, this streak of success is unprecedented, and they keep adding to it, so it continues to be unprecedented. Like, that this hasn't been done in any top five league in ever. So obviously what we're seeing here is something historical. Obviously, like Sam said, at this point, both due to the infrastructure in the club and for the actual team that they field on the pitch, they are still the best team in Italy, and they will continue to be the best team in Italy, I hope, and on paper they should be for the next couple of years at least. But I don't think that they will ever, and this might be me tempting the football gods, but I don't think they will ever have like a long extended, you know, dry period like the question mentions, because Juventus has never really overall had like really long dry periods in for league championships. You know, they've been pretty consistently good. I mean, they've won at least in every decade since like the 60s. So even going behind, I think they won every year at least once since the 50s or the 40s. So they historically have never had like a very long, you know, dry spell, at least in Italy. Obviously, we know that, you know, Champions League is a whole different thing. But at least in Italy, I don't think they will ever go through like a very long, sustained period of not winning anything. Unlike, for example, I don't know, like a club, top of my head, Inter Milan, who hasn't won anything in like over 3,000 days, I think, and counting. So, you know, shout out that club, that Twitter account that just posts how many days has gone by since Inter has won.
I love that account.
Yeah, I just love that account. Shout out to that person. But, you know, I just don't think Juventus will ever go through something like that, at least unless something, you know, absolutely catastrophic happens. But I don't think so, at least. I really want them to win the 10th in a row now. Like, if the streak ends after the 10th, that's fine. I think it'd be really neat to have that just like full decade, like, you know, double digit, just complete dominance. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add on that one, except that really, as is the case with many things in life, I always follow the money. So if, with respect to Juve's, you know, future dominance, I think it's just going to depend on money, frankly. We obviously are pretty extended / overextended because of Ronaldo's wages. I remember that, I forget who posted it. I think it may have been Tre Stelline posted that picture of the wages, the salaries of all the clubs. And so, yeah. And I mean, yeah, obviously we're the highest, we have the highest wage bill, the highest payroll. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to depend on how much we can sustain our finances above and beyond other clubs in Italy. If we can sustainably and consistently be, well, more cash flow positive than other clubs in Italy, then yeah, I mean, I expect, okay, sure, we might not win the title one or two seasons, but I mean, we're just obviously going to be up there because frankly, and unfortunately, it is the money that talks these days, which kind of unrelated, but I don't know if you guys read about the Project Big Picture in the Premier League, which caused quite the stir in England, which is basically a domestic super league that they were trying to do, but quickly got shot down. And I'm very curious to hear what people in the comments will think about that. So yeah, anyway, money talks.
Just to let you know, Sergio, according to today's post from Days Since Inter Won a Trophy, it is 3,423.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. No, I mean, like, that's just because
it's not enough.
It's not even, not winning a league. It's just not winning anything. Like, that to me is wild. Like, a team with the supposed, like, I mean, Inter is not like a provincial side that like is in danger of being relegated. Like, they have money. Like, they should have at least like one, like, I don't know, like a Coppa Italia or something, just like by sheer happenstance. But you know, they're frauds. They continue to be frauds, and they will forever be frauds.
As a wise man once said,
Those are rookie numbers. You gotta get those numbers up.
Oh, that's such a great movie. Bit too long, but such a great movie.
A bit too long. All right. We will wrap things up on that note. Thank you all for the Twitter questions. Unfortunately, we kind of were running tight on time here, so we only got to one of them this week, but hopefully next week with games back, we'll have a little more time to take the Twitter questions. So I want to let you guys know, as always, you can follow us on social and send us your questions there at Juventus Nation on Twitter. Just a couple plugs real quick. As Sam mentioned briefly, I did a roundtable podcast with Tito from Viola Nation and Bren from Chiesa di Totti, where we looked at the ending of the transfer window and the kind of the happenings around the league, which, seeing as Juventus-Napoli happened a few days after we recorded, well, you can probably guess that we discussed that and the league's handling of everything COVID-19. And a completely different note, I was actually a guest on YouTube live session with the Juve at Juve Therapy count with Roman, who had me on and basically just grilled me for a whole lot of time. And we talked a lot of things Juventus, and there were some people dropping by. So it was something I've never done before, and it was a pretty cool format to take part of for the first time. So check that out. It's on YouTube. You can find that at Juve Therapy is a Twitter account to find that link. So as always, you can listen to us on Apple iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, like, and rate there. You can find us on Spotify and Google Podcasts as always. I want to thank Sam, Sergio, and Chucks for hanging out once again. So for those three men, this is Danny saying thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.